Hey there, welcome to Broadcast to Post. I'm Jeff Sengpiel, CTO at Keycode Media. This is the show where we interview leaders and experts in the AV, broadcast, and post-production spaces. We're giving you the inside tips to grow your media workflows and business today. Welcome to the State of Live Production, and it's good to see everybody live yet again after so many months not live. So let's start off with the introductions. And I'm just going to have everybody introduce themselves. So let's start off first with Randall.
Okay. I'm Randall Hurst, CEO and founder of Vista Studios.
Sounds good.
Dan Howes, VP of Encoding and Digital Strategy, BC Live Productions.
George Klippel, Director of Channel Sales for LiveU.
Awesome sauce. So we've got a wide breadth of experience here, and we're going to be getting into some hopefully not too difficult questions. What we're going to do is we're going to start with George and work this way for the first round. So tell us a little about your company or department and how you are approaching a video strategy with live production in today's new day and age.
Yeah, so LiveU was founded in 2006. We're the industry leader in bonded cellular or IP cellular connectivity. What we do is we really solve customers' problems where they're having connectivity issues on the field. We replace satellite systems. We help people connect using bonded cellular. So we're taking multiple modems in our units like T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, Ethernet, Wi-Fi, bonding those together, making a big fat pipe to the internet, and getting your video from point A to point B, whether that's to a cloud infrastructure or an on-prem infrastructure and doing REMI productions. And essentially, that's what our company does, and we've been doing it for over 15 years. We started in the broadcast side of the space, and that's where we got our kind of foothold. We have about 65% of the market globally in that world. And every network uses LiveU, has a LiveU decoder. But more and more, we're seeing production companies like these here on the stage and others, not only production companies, but corporate Fortune 100 companies and others using our technology day in and day out, including sports and education institutions using our technology to to do day-to-day type of work and to stream reliable video back from the field to destinations that they want to get to around the globe. So essentially, that's what we do as an organization.
Awesome. Thanks, George. Dan?
Yeah.
How are you approaching a video strategy with live production in today's day and age?
Yes, absolutely. So we're based out of here in Burbank, California. BC Live Productions, we're a boutique video production company. We've obviously always had live video and a strategy for that. But now it is, the producers we're finding know enough to be dangerous, right? And within this COVID period, being ready for all of those expectations that come our way on a live show, right? If it's from, Zoom and Teams and, let's just bring somebody in, on their phone to a more robust solution. I like to say we try to be ubiquitous but robust, right? So we don't want the quality of our shows to go down, but we want to make them as accessible as possible, not only with talent necessarily in the show, but more and more, and sometimes most more challenging than others, is the producers and everybody else backstage that would have normally been on a set or that is making key decisions. Those folks know that they don't have to leave their homes anymore, and they expect to have a good experience from their side viewing into our production, whether that be on site or if it's completely in the cloud. So a lot of that is, we spend a lot of time doing that, is making sure that everyone on the production has a good experience, whether it's talent, producers, that sort of thing. And we're focusing a lot of that in our efforts this year.
And BC Live is not only a Keycode client, but they've saved our bacon with a couple other clients of ours. So big thanks to you.
I'll give you that $20 later. Thanks for that.
Randall, what do you see as the new strategy?
Well, Vista Studios was founded about 6 years ago. We've been in operation for about five. I took a look at the landscape of the marketplace and said, there's a niche there that isn't being serviced. Mission critical live productions are going to be increasing in volume. The linear networks are selling off their brick and mortar capabilities. And you have new players coming into the marketplace, big streamers that don't have either the brick and mortar, nor do they have the technical staffs to do the kind of mission critical live productions that I come from in my career. So we took over a 30,000 square foot building in Vista, in Playa Vista, California, and built it out for mission critical live. Generator, ATS, UPS, 4K, 2K, 1080i, and everything in between in any format and any frame rate. And the idea was we were going to be able to do turnkey productions for clients walking in the door. And when you look at something that's happened over the last couple of years with COVID, you know, people are working remotely, you're doing Remy productions, production offices are being scaled back, and you're getting smaller footprints in production companies and remote edits. They're not doing as many edit bays in the office anymore. We built a facility that can support all of that. So our strategy has been do the most difficult kind of production out there, do it turnkey. And when COVID came along, we happened to have a solution that allowed Remy capabilities, it allowed remote edits, and it put us in a good position to survive and flourish during a really challenging period. So our attitude is offer turnkey services at the very highest level and get it, have it ready for live mission critical, and you can do that in anything of a lesser standard, near live or as live. So that's what we built it to do, and fortunately in when COVID hit, we were adaptable and ready to make the changes that had to be made over the last couple of years. So that's been our approach.
Awesome, thanks. So next question, and we're going to start with Dan on this one. Tell us about a recent technical project you've worked on and what made it really cool and unique.
Yeah, there's this company that's pretty cool. They're called LiveView. And
Let me get my $20.
Yeah. We actually did we've done a bunch of fun projects here with George, but one of them most recently was for the Molokai Hoi. And if any of you are fans of paddlers, right, in Hawaii, they do this paddle race between the islands. And it's been going for, 60 years or something. There's a really cool case study on their website if you want to go check it out. But we were technical partners for Ocean Paddler TV. And basically, they had dinghy boats out in the ocean following these paddlers for how many miles is it? It's like 20?
Something like that. Yeah, the outrigger race.
Yeah, the outrigger
race.
It's huge. Yeah, it's crazy to watch those guys work. But they had dinghy boats, you know, out in the middle of the ocean, and we had to bring everything back over bonded cellular to the control room, which is literally in the middle of the island, and then broadcast that out to local television, to, you know, all the different destinations that they may want to go to. And so it was a pretty cool project to work with these guys on, to see that technology work, to see it. You know, the biggest thing is that when, you know, a signal may drop out or something like that, which is bound to happen when you're out in the middle of the ocean. How quickly does it recover? Is it in sync? You know, does that decoder actually do its job and make everything still in sync so we can cut a perfect show? And it was awesome to work with LiveView on that to make those things happen. So we had a lot of fun on that.
Yeah, and just to add to that too, because I think Randall, right? Randall mentioned this too about Remy production, because BC Live's been doing Remy, and we've been doing Remy for years. I've been with LiveView for 6 years, and you know, Remy started off in sports. Really, that's where it got its niche. But you know, that race was one of the last things we did before COVID hit. And Remy skyrocketed after the COVID pandemic, and rightfully so, because everybody moved into their homes and started setting up insert studios and doing these remote production type of events. And in this particular case, you know, we're out in the middle of the ocean, we're sending feeds back, we're using extenders, we're using at the finish line in Oahu, they had thousands of people there, right? And they're all streaming and wanting to stream, and bandwidth is finite when you're dealing with any type of production with bonded cellular, right? And it just gets sucked down to eventually zero. And, you know, having the ability to work with quality equipment and productions where you're sending a signal back to a server and it's getting, you know, it could be miles away, it could be in the next country, it's irrelevant where it is when you're doing a Remy production. But really, from our standpoint, over the last 3 years, we've seen Remy just skyrocket, just blow right off the charts. And people who used to be taking fly packs and building up big fly packs and sending out trucks everywhere, they've realized there's monetary savings here and real you know, logistical savings, money, everything else, right? Because you're moving to this type of workflow and you're able to save and use your existing infrastructure and facilities like Randall's to do these types of productions, really. So it was a big savings, not only for this one instance, but for us at LiveView, we've just seen it, you know, skyrocket from a production standpoint.
Awesome. So, I mean, that takes care of both of you. One project, two stones is perfect. Randall, how about you? Cool, unique project.
Only one?
You know what? You can have two.
If he does two, I want to do two. No, if we got time.
Oh, man. I said that is the challenge that we've had during COVID is we've had a bunch of different curveballs. So just to highlight a couple of things. We did an 11-camera 4K production for YouTube, Google, Tiny Food, a bunch of POV cameras in 4K, a bunch of kids running around and stuff. So it was a fun production. And it kind of stresses what we do and showcases 4K capabilities natively and, you know, a lot of high turnover and a high volume. So that was one of the most interesting things we did recently. It was high camera count, and it was an interesting project.
Which makes me ask, if it's Tiny Food, why do you need to see it in 4K?
We asked the question. Whatever they want.
You know what? Hey, whatever you want, we'll make it happen. George, do you have another one, or do you want to stick with the paddling? Because that is a pretty cool project.
Yeah, no, you know, we did one previously to that was pretty cool with the ocean cleanup project. I don't know if you remember that one, but that was part of one we did together with Key Code Media, where in San Francisco Bay, they were taking out this big rig out into the middle of the ocean to collect all the debris in the, I forget what it was called, the big garbage patch out there, where there's this circular continuum that just somehow grabs all the crap out in the ocean and the plastics and everything else, and it just for some reason it keeps circling around and around. And this entrepreneur from Sweden, I believe, came up with this technology to go out and kind of collect it out there and bring it back in. And we did this Remy shoot where we had drones and everything else, and we were on the Air Force Base, I believe, where Key Code was switching it. You know, we had multiple cameras, again, doing just another Remy production. And I think it was just, again, another way of showcasing that technology, using it with multiple cameras, which was really good. But I will say that now we're seeing, and this just ties into the post-NAB name of this thing, you know, at NAB this year, everything before, and even in this case where we did this event with BC Live and that event with you, you know, it's on-prem servers, right? We were using on-prem servers, and now we're moving a lot of this to the cloud where, you know, before we're having SDI out and NDI out and RTMP coming out of a physical server. And a big move and a big push that you're seeing at NAB was a lot of people talking about cloud infrastructure. And for LiveView, that means for us now our cloud servers that used to just do RTMP, now we're doing MPEG TS, now we're doing SRT, now we're doing NDI out of the cloud. So I think that's going to change a lot of dynamics for people like Randall, and I think other companies too that want that cloud infrastructure, because some companies and organizations, especially for us when we're working with federal government or in very secure organizations, and you know, I'm not from Hollywood like you all are probably, but I'm assuming the studios out here just don't like slapping in a server and open up ports, right? They probably don't dig that. So cloud infrastructure is much easier to get in and to allow that to happen. So I think that's a big thing that you'll see coming down the road. Maybe I skipped a little bit ahead on questions.
That's perfectly fine, because that gets me in. That's a perfect segue into the next question about upgrading equipment, and cloud lives in that space too. So Randall, let's start with you on this one. Have you gone about upgrading equipment over the recent few years? How has that changed from how you did upgrades in the past?
For us, we needed the flexibility of when anyone walks in the door, if they're going to be working 4K, 2K, it doesn't matter to us. So the kinds of things that we expanded on, we expanded our core routing capabilities, we expanded our core communications matrix. So those were the basic kind of pathways of connectivity that allowed us to do what we needed to do with Remy's and high 4K count shows. So that's what we did specifically during COVID. And because we had an opportunity to kind of get our manufacturers' attention when things were slow, we were able to get, you know, really good lead times on things, get it deployed, get it properly configured without, you know, a lot of elaborate lead time. So that's what we did. We focused on our core competency. And in the middle of COVID, we did a couple of things. We doubled the size of our company. So we took a second building, and then we fibered together the two buildings. So now we started with 28,000 square feet. Now we have 50. We started with four stages. Now we have six. So it was sort of a setting the foundation kind of a thing for us to do.
Doubling down, that's always an interesting strategy. And I've yet to hear that fail for folks that doubled down during COVID. So just one interesting thing I've heard in we did one of these already in Seattle and this one today, and people who doubled down got double profits. So it's a good thing there. Dan, upgrades.
Yeah, I think for us, an upgrade of mindset was interesting. You know, we've always done a lot of live production on set, going out. But we decided to partner, as soon as COVID happened, we decided to partner with the Switch, and we built out several control rooms around Los Angeles. And one is at the Switch's location on Motor Avenue, and allowed us to basically have a lot of ins and outs out of their routers, taking advantage of their fiber and their AWS Direct Connect, which was great. And it allowed us to, I think, the upgrade mindset of accessibility and platforms, right? Offering more to our clients that would come in the door and say, if you want to do multiple audio translations or captioning, that's sort of a passion of mine. I have a family member that's deaf, hard of hearing, and I've always really been into captioning and really been into audio translations and how to provide the best user experience. So we spent a lot of time working with partners and upgrading our partnerships for distribution. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of challenges, right? But very rewarding.
Awesome. So that question really doesn't apply to you, George. So let's go with, what do you see the big challenges for the industry right now?
Wow. I thought it did apply to me, but I'll go with the challenges of the industry. Really, I think it's just keeping up with technology. There's so many changes, so many things that are happening, and there's so many different workflows that are available out there. I think that's one of the biggest challenges to the industry on people coming up, even today at the tables here, asking, you know, what do you do? How does this integrate with this? How does it work with SNS? How does it work with Avid? How does it work with Grass Valley Amp? You know, there's so many people that want to ask that question. And, you know, Randall already mentioned it about his facility working with so many different things. And I think BC Live, you guys are in the same boat. People come to us and it's not just they want to know about LiveU. They want to know about how LiveU integrates with all these other pieces of tech. And I think that's a big, big challenge. And for us, you know, I started with LiveU 6 years ago, and it used to be just an encoder, decoder solution. And now we have all of these other products and Cloud Connect and all of these other things to make it easier for a customer who is using Grass Valley Amp or VizRT Vector or whatever, that we can integrate with those pieces and these tools, because it is about workflow. It is about other tools that you're using. It's not just about, okay, we're only LiveU and we can only work in our little sandbox, right? We showed Ingest at NAB, for example, and LiveU Ingest integrates seamlessly with Avid iNews and works in that world now. So for those broadcasters that use iNews, we have a seamless solution that works with that today. And then we'll eventually have ENPS integration. So, I mean, that's what the story people want to hear. But those are those problems that I think people are trying to solve when they talk to different manufacturers. At least that's what we're hearing.
Integrated solutions.
Right.
Keeping people ahead of technology. I've heard that logo somewhere before. Dan, let's go with you on this one.
Yeah.
What are the main production challenges you're facing today? What have you been doing to overcome them? And what would be a single piece of technology that would make your work life simpler?
Let me answer the two questions. All right. So I think this may this is maybe a sensitive topic, but I think we worked with Oprah and Prince Harry on a project called The Me You Can't See, and it was on Apple TV Plus. We were with them for about 6 months, doing a lot of right in that height of COVID, completely remote controlled, right? Sony Venice cameras that could not be operated by a person, had to be all remote controlled. You know, 70 to 80 producers and executives and all this kind of stuff needing to have secure access in and out of a production. And one of the things that they talked about in that series over and over was mental health. And I think that, you know, when COVID happened in March 2020, probably most of us in this room were like, let's go. This is, you know, we're going to help and let's revamp and retool. And what are we going to do? And a lot of us have been sort of on this high, if you will. And this past summer, for me, it finally started to slow down a little bit. And it was like, now then it kind of hit me, you know, and it started to hit some of our employees once we kind of got over this high. And so we've really been looking back on some of those lessons learned actually with that show, interestingly enough, and saying, how do we apply this to our company? How do we make sure that we're giving people time off? How do we address turnover? All those kind of things. And I think it's super important. Now the fun question, ask me again, so I don't get it wrong.
Main production challenges or the piece of technology?
Oh, the piece of technology?
That would make your work life easier.
That does make my work life easier?
No, that would.
Well, that would. Oh, my. I'd have to think on that. But I'll tell you what, my favorite piece of technology that I purchased, thanks to you guys that helped us source all kinds of stuff through COVID, and it's not Dante related.
Okay.
We're all still waiting on those audio consoles, aren't we? Yamaha, come on. But the Terranex AV from Blackmagic, I'll tell you, that thing, and I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a nerd, because I'm into encoding and I'm into trying a transmission at the end of the chain, but that thing has saved my life time and time again. It can have delays on it. It can change your frame rate, your resolution. This morning, we had to do a thing with Chef Jose Andreas, World Kitchen, and I literally just raced over here to get here, and he was in the Ukraine. They're feeding all these people. His video came in upside down. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He goes, don't give me shit. I'm in the middle of Ukraine. Come on. His video was literally upside down in his camera and something was locked, you know, sometimes on the iPhone where it won't turn. So, you know, the Terranex AV, baby, it just helped me kind of turn that image around and we put him on the air. So
it's a great thing, product. It's the little things that bring us joy. I love it. Randall, how about you?
What's the
first part of the question is, what's my password? Because I fell asleep.
The challenge of the moment. Then?
The challenge of the moment. Main production challenges you're facing today. What have you been doing to overcome them? And what would be a piece of technology that would make your work life simpler?
The challenges of today. What's happened during COVID is you're hitting a lot of singles. You're getting a lot of ad hoc, one-off kinds of things. For us, that's why the infrastructure of our facility has helped us a lot. It's adaptable and it's already been pre-configured. So what we're finding right now is you're getting a lot of little one-offs. And before COVID, we would have people coming in saying, hey, we want to block out a stage for 2 years. And now what we're getting is, hey, we want to block off a stage for 2 weeks. So the biggest challenge of the moment is the transactional nature of what we're dealing with on a recurring basis, which are a lot of little lightweight ones. So you're getting a lot more turnover than you saw before COVID. It hasn't settled back out to long-term commitments, long-term engagements, and we expect that's going to be coming. And what would make my life easier, it isn't technology, it's just more human help. I mean, we have to track so many moving parts. If you come to shoot, we've got add this, subtract that, bring this in, change that. So it's just, when you're doing a lot of these transactional things because of the way the environment is right now, you need more high-end quality labor to make sure that it, you know, everything's getting done. So right now, I don't need any technology. I just need really competent engineering firemen that are committed. You know, that's what we need more of.
So if you got your resume.
Yeah.
The thing is, labor supply chain is a real problem. Everybody's facing that in all manners of business, and you know we see it from McDonald's all the way up to to everybody. George, what do you think? What are the main production challenges you're seeing today, and what would be a cool piece of technology that you'd love to see out there that would make your work life easier?
Well, the main production challenges, I guess, you know, I'd echo everything these guys would say on the production side, especially what you were saying about mental health and people getting back together because, you know, everybody was hit hard, right? And again, I talked a little bit about the workflow piece and that tie-in. So, and with, you know, from live use standpoint, I started, you know, 6 years ago, and we were just the encoders and decoders, and we've been continuing to develop production tools, and now we have Tally and, you know, PTC camera control, remote audio connect, Dante integration. So I'm lucky to work for a company that keeps building on innovation and keeps connecting and interconnecting with different partners. And, you know, I hope that that will continue, and I believe that it will continue for us. So I don't have the same experience as these two gentlemen have in that regard. But, you know, if I could think of one piece of technology that would make my life easier, it would be a robot to help me with what I have to do every day in and day out with my partners and the customers I work with. I need that type of technology.
Any questions for our panel from our audience today?
I wonder about the boats and the bottom of the signal. Were you guys transmitting from that? Like, how far does cell signal get out? You guys were broadcasting the stuff live, right? So were the boats and transmitters and the little dinghies?
Yeah. So we used LiveU has this cool technology called an extender that has six additional modems in it, plus high frequency gain antennas that you can connect either via Ubiquiti or wirelessly or via Ethernet. So it gives you the ability to go off, you know, offshore or in different areas with a lot of people, crowded people, like a Super Bowl or an event. But it pretty much, we were at the furthest distance. I think we were about 5 miles off the shore at the furthest distance out. But when you're in the ocean, we've done things with the Navy and the Coast Guard and that, where you lose signal is as soon as you go over the horizon. And it's irrelevant where what you're using, unless you start using BGAN or satellite. But with bonded cellular in any shape or form, or even with an extender, once you go over the horizon, you're out of luck.
And that particular gig was fun. We had the luck of having a really solid Verizon infrastructure because of the military on the island, right? So they've really built it up to make sure that all of those shores are covered. So. You know, and part of that is mapping ahead of time, right? And literally, you know, building into the budget to take those dinghy boats out and to see where our challenge is going to be. You know, it's kind of old school, but it's the best way to do that is do your testing.
And we did have a helicopter coverage too, right? So you had helicopter coverage that was cut away. If you got, you know, if the boats were out of coverage range, you had a helicopter cutaway. And so you know, there was a bunch of different, you know, cutaway angles that you could go to or they could go to at any time.
Planning ahead. Any other questions? Any other things you guys want to hit on for live production? I mean, there's one other question I can ask. It's the fun one. Wasn't on your list.
Uh-oh.
Where do you think we're going to be in 2025? Dan, let's start with you, because you got that look.
I hope that I'm on a catamaran drinking some bourbon.
What do you think the industry is going to be in 2025? Far away from your catamaran drinking the bourbon.
Yeah. Honestly, being the youngest on the panel up here, I feel like I don't have the experience to answer that. I mean, it's amazing to see how much technology has changed even in the last 2.5 years, right? So I think it goes a lot back to now putting stock and effort into our staff and treating and knowing that people know that they have the option to, you know what, I don't really want to live in California anymore. I'd love to still work for you, but I really just want to go back to
Arkansas.
Yeah, I was going to say Canton, Ohio, which is where I'm from, you know.
That's good, too.
Pro Football Hall of Famers, you know. But, I mean, I've been thinking about that in my head. It's like, do I really want to live in the rat race 5 years from now, I guess? And what is the feasibility of me just being able to move to Mexico and, you know, and do a Remy show or something? So it'll be really interesting to see where those things are. Don't have a great answer. Sorry.
George, how about you? We're 5 years.
Yeah, I think. In that amount of time, 5G is going to be everywhere for sure, if not something else. better. I think Starlink hopefully will be deployed and out everywhere. I think Remy's not going to be something new and exciting to anybody anymore. I think it's just going to be par for the course for almost every type of production because of the money and cost savings, and I think everybody's going to be doing it. I think there's going to be other technologies that we haven't even thought of yet that'll be out there, of course. And I'm with Dan. I just, you know, I don't have that. You know, if Dan Pisarski, our VP of Engineering here, he'd have a much better answer than I would. But, you know, technology is just developing so fast. Again, we have a four-channel output unit now, or input unit now, and I never thought that was going to happen. So there's just so many things that I can imagine that would come down the pipe. But I just think everybody's going to be connected everywhere. I don't, you know, and bonded 5G, everybody talks about 5G is, you know, going to replace bonding, but you still need bonding. And I think bonded cellular is here to stay. And the amount of money people have spent on sat trucks has just continued to decline. And I think it's just going to keep declining and
just democratization of the tools. That's what I'm
hearing. Yeah, migration of tools.
Randall, what do you think 5 years from now?
You know, When you bring a new business to the marketplace and you develop a business plan and you go out and raise money to stand something up, you have to kind of look at the landscape and see what's happening. So when I look at the landscape of what's happening, the indications that came from Netflix in the last few weeks give me an indication of what's happening for the next 5 years. So I built a facility that was geared towards the streamers. When were the streamers going to begin producing the kind of shoulder programming that I'm used to coming from the linear network world? I came from local affiliates. I was at Metro Media in 1985. I was at Fox when it was created. I was at the station group. I was at network. So what we always had was early fringe, 5 to 8. You had the talk shows, entertainment shows, sitcoms, your news. And that was the pipeline that funneled viewers into the big prime programming. I think the lesson that Netflix learned a few weeks ago is you don't share passwords. You don't put all your content out at one time. And you don't ignore day of air topical based programming. That's the gateway that brings people to the party. You can't ignore sports. You can't ignore day of air. So what do I see in 5 years? I see the streamers taking the playbook of the old linear networks and beginning to treat their platforms more like what we've seen that has worked for years. Those shoulder programs are the promotional elements that bring you to the big, high-value video on-demand assets. And I think 5 years from now, we're going to see consolidation, and the streamers are going to be almost indistinguishable from what we grew up as the old network model. So I think that's what's coming.
And I think to add to that, I believe we're going to start to see aggregation. So just like we paid cable TV providers for years to do all of this aggregation of content and channels, I think we'll see the same thing happening with the streaming services. I will have, you know, stream platform number one, and it will have all these other channels inside of it. So it'll have...
The key will be the demise of Netflix is, you know, radically overstated because 225, 230 million viewers. That's enough aggregated viewership that they can be a rallying point for other people's content. So they're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It supports what you're saying. There's going to be much, much more of that. And the viewership will drive the mergers and acquisitions.
And the other fun thing is we you know, being in the technology business, we're always trying to look ahead and see where those changes are going to come. And one of those places you can see it is people's hiring patterns. So there are streamers that are looking to hire people in the linear content, day of air, sports, those well, things are coming.
Amazon Thursday Night Football, that deal is done. And you'll probably be hearing about in the next 2 to 4 weeks that Apple is securing NFL Sunday Ticket for $2.5 billion a year. And the NFL, one of the most savvy media negotiating entities in the history of media, they now will be in business with Amazon, Apple, and the remaining powerhouse linear networks. So, you know, they're telling you what's happening. They're choreographing it, and we're going to be following along as companies and entities that support that execution. So
So you've had a look around the corner to see where the traffic is. So now, now you're going to know.
Well, where's Apple going to do NFL Sunday Ticket? Where are these things going to be hosted? Hopefully in facilities and in situations where people who've done it before can bring their expertise to bear. Hopefully.
Exactly. Or our friends at Apple may be looking to do acquisitions. I mean, that's the piece we never can tell. Plus, the other fun thing is, I just read an article today that all of ABC's O&O origination is now done out of Woodlands, Texas. Doesn't matter if it's KABC, WABC, it's done out of Woodland, Texas. All of network is done there.
It's no accident that CBS Viacom sold TV City and the Radford lot for a total of $2.5 billion. The brick and mortar goes away. They get into an OPEX model. And the cash goes to drive content creation. They know what they're doing. They're savvy.
They've been around for a while. Any last?
I have a question. So speaking of 5 years ahead and the automation and the need for workforce. So speaking of live production, has anybody worked with or is anybody aware of any software that is being developed on the AI side or algorithm side that would automate the live production editing?
Well, there's been a number of things that have been out there. I remember there being an assistant editor plugin that would work for Final Cut once upon a time. I think we will get to that point. I mean, there are live production systems that can do their own switching based upon their understanding of, say, a particular sport. So if it's basketball, they know this is happening, you go there, zoom into the ball, that sort of thing. That sort of piece is not that difficult. I don't think you're going to get the finesse that you're going to get from a human creative at this point in time. You may be able to get a rough idea of story. And the other thing I've seen is, people being able to, you feed a script and you feed it time codes and you get a rough build. And you just go in and polish.
I wonder what the AI algorithm would do about network nodes.
Throw up all over itself.
How are you going to incorporate that?
Did that computer just flip me off? I don't understand that.
I think you bring up a great point. Rough cut, probably there's going to be a way to get it close. I think that would reduce sub mastering costs, but the finesse, because it's so much feel.
The volume of content is increasing, right? Everybody wants to be something unique. Everybody wants to upload something somewhere, but it's in such a rough state because everybody is using their phones, et cetera, et cetera. So if there's an AI software or algorithm that would stream that for users, that would be some
That gets into asset management, and if it's in the cloud, there are a lot of things that can be done. This used to be, when I was in on the production side, it used to be something I used to talk about a lot. I can do anything you want, provided you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah, no,
that's not going to be free.
And I think too, and the lead is going to come from sports, in my opinion, because there's already AI solutions that can cut just from a live feed that can cut between plays and just do basic cuts only between plays, and that's already out there now.
Recap engines.
Yeah.
I don't think we can overstate what has happened during the pandemic, which was for years, all the production houses brought in post into their own officing. It was another revenue opportunity for them. And now that you're doing virtualization of editing and editing remotely, you've unlocked the production companies from being tied to a physical real estate footprint. And that means editors can be working the other side of the world, the other side of the country, and the content can still be safe and secure behind a firewall. So I think that's going to alleviate a lot of the bottleneck that may have existed for this accelerated content creation. And that's one of the things that we brought a new product to market during COVID to support specifically that. And we're seeing that as an important development that happened just in the last 2 years.
Thank you.
Tony?
I have a question.
Okay.
I want to ask Dan House a question.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Dan, what's Oprah really like? Come on. You, we brought you here, you got to tell us.
The record light is still red. I'm not an idiot. And now he leaves the room.
Yes.
That's Tony for you.
Throws a bomb and then takes off. We're understanding of that.
That was a wine-fueled comment.
It was, yes. A little Chardonnay, well, that'll happen. Any last thoughts before we call it a day?
What do you see as far as 3D or VR for the future of life?
From my avid days, this has been tried and stopped and tried and stopped and tried and stopped. So I don't know where it's going to go, but there was a lot of stuff at NAB this year I saw. So it's still trying. So I'll ask these other professionals who might be deeply involved in it, but
we provided engineering support for the 360 activation for the Super Bowl halftime show this year. And so they had nine Insta stream cameras out there. And, you know, I just, as a viewer at home, I just don't want to work that hard. You know, I really don't. I don't know. I feel like my grandpa or something when I say I'm right. It's just, I don't get it. You know, and that's kind of where my mindset is still on some of those things. But I'm sure Randall can give a very more eloquent answer.
I can't comment on 3D personally, but we've been doing VR for the last year in our building number 2, 40-foot monitor wall, 4 Venice cameras in 6K, home interactive workouts for a marquee client of ours, and Disguise software, Unreal Engine, driving all of it. And we've had a great experience with it over the last year. Because of COVID, they were able to bring people working out from home, bring them into the 40-foot monitor wall and make it feel like a social interactive experience with the telemetry fed to the cameras and all of it tracking. So it had the feel of you're in the room. And it was a high value production, and we've learned a lot, and I think it has a lot of future. It's an ideal deployment of that, actually. So
you might also look into a thing called Fantagrams, which is a 3D that's designed to be seen flat on the table, so you're looking 45-degree angle, and the things rise up. Mm-hmm. So imagine watching a football game from that perspective.
Yeah, Sony showed something at their booth.
Yeah, volumetric capture is going to be something that's very interesting that's coming along. I mean, the film business started in New York City. When they turned into shooting outside, they said, we need somewhere that we don't have to stay inside 4 months out of the year. That's why they came here. It was all about weather and being able to do that. So it drove what the production is. With volumetric capture, you can do anything in a room this size. It doesn't matter where that is supposed to be or whether it's even real. You know, we can generate with Unreal Engine or Unity a environment that's, you know, it's an alien planet. It doesn't exist, and it can look like it's perfectly perfectly lit and perfectly set for the action that's supposed to happen on it. The Mandalorian happened that way.
Yeah, and Dan is not real here. This is not real Dan, but
it's AI Dan.
AI Dan.
But he's an Unreal engineer.
Exactly.
And Canon has their stereoscopic 180 camera here at their booth today.
So there's some definitely cool technologies out there, and there's some other very cool clients out there. Imagine 18,000 people sitting in a stadium, and you've got video all around you. This is the stuff that dreams are made of, and guess what? It's happening. So thanks to George, Randall, Dan for joining me today. And thanks for everybody for joining us on this State of Live production.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow KeyCode Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV, broadcast, and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.